We have Tim Kennedy, the UFC's number 6 ranked middleweight in the world, here with us. Tim, thank you so much for taking a minute out of your day. How you doing today, man?
Oh, dude, I could not be better. Good week, good week.
Awesome, awesome. Yeah, I've read about your 6 to 10 week training regimen, but at the moment you're sort of in an off period waiting on an opponent. How rigorous is your diet and training schedule when you're in an off period like this one?
I'm enjoying life. I'm gonna go have some Texas barbecue this weekend, but Thursday, Friday. It's still good. You know, my diet's clean. I still work out 2 times a week, but I'm always ready to go.
Yeah, one of our co-hosts, Ramsey's, actually also lives in Austin, Texas. He wasn't able to make it for the interview. He had to work. But where would you say the best Texas barbecue in the state is?
Oh, man. Probably Franklin's. Yeah, Franklin's barbecue is pretty amazing.
Yeah, I've actually heard a lot about that place. I think it's on like a Visa ad or something. But let's get into the MMA. I actually heard your recent appearance on the Joe Rogan Experience, as did a lot of people. If you haven't heard it yet, go back and listen to it. A lot of our listeners wanted us to follow up on your statement that you were actually prepared to move down to welterweight if Robbie Lawler had defeated Johnny Hendricks. As we all know, you have a win against Lawler from Strikeforce. Had you talked to the UFC before that fight about getting a title shot if Lawler won, or was that just discussed within your camp?
It was just, it was discussed within our camp. You know, it wasn't like, not that Johnny Hendricks wouldn't be a good fight, you know, but I thought it was going to be an easy fight to sell to the UFC for me to go to them and be like, hey, you know, last time I fought him, I won a decisive 30-27 victory. That was his last real legitimate loss. You know, he had a couple of close ones after that, but I thought it was a sellable fight to both Joe Silva and Dana. And that's why I was going to go after it. I think in height and reach, I'm a small 185 guy. You know, like I realize I'm big and I'm strong and I'm heavy, but which John Jones has proved, that doesn't necessarily make up for reach and height. You know, those are advantages that are very difficult to get past, you know, being a 5'11" guy in a division where the average height is 6'2".
Yeah. I I assume you still haven't waved off the possibility of moving down to 170. What would need to happen for you to make that move?
Big fights, you know. I know at 185, you know, I'm one fight away from a title shot. You know, if I fight, I'm 3-0, you know, just beat Michael Bisping, knocked out Rafael Nadal, beat Roger Gracie. So, you know, if I fight a marquee, you know, I'm ranked 6 right now. If I fight, you know, 5-4-3-2, you know, that's the title eliminator. My last two fights have been 5-round main event fights. You know, I'm definitely going to get a title shot after my next fight. So the only time it would make sense for me to move down to 170 is if it was similar there. You know, another big, huge, big name, big opportunity fight, you know, to fight, you know, some marquee guys. That would be a reason why I'd cut down there. It would be a horrible, hard, painful cut. So the motivation has to be there, you know, like a title fight or, you know, a big super fight.
Aside from Robbie Lawler, do any marquee names at welterweight stick out for you?
Dude, I think 170 and 185 are the two most stacked divisions in the UFC. John Jones and Cain have kind of cleared out 205. 155 is definitely nearly as competitive, but when you start walking down that list, you know, it's a who's who of guys that have been there for a long time. You know, Damian Maia is a big name that sticks out to me. Nick Diaz, who could fight at 70 or 85, who's currently retired. He and I have crossed paths on so many different instances. I love the guy. I'm a huge Nick Diaz fan. I follow him on Twitter. He's hilarious when he actually, breaks out of his shell and does some things. But he'd be one hell of a fight to have. You know, that'd be a blast.
Yeah, I'm sure all of the fans would love to see Kennedy versus Diaz. Getting back to middleweight, I'm sure you're tired of people asking you who you want to fight next, but I have sort of a twist on that question for you. Would you rather have a rematch against Luke Rockhold or Jacare, or would you prefer to fight someone you haven't fought before, like a Lyoto or a Vitor?
Whichever fight gets me the title faster. And I think if I fought any of those guys, the next fight's a title fight, you know. And that's a shark tank. You know, when you start moving up the division from Chris Weidman to Anderson Silva to Lyoto Machida to Vitor Belfort, you know, Luke, Jacare, me, all right, that's the top six guys right there. Hell, that is a gauntlet.
That has got to be the best top six in the entire UFC, really.
Yeah. Yeah, it's crazy. And on any given night, I don't know how any of those matchups between all of us would go. You know, for me, I really think the easiest fight from me to the champ is Anderson Silva. You know, he stylistically, where he is in his career. If is he ranked 3 or 2? That compared to everybody else in the division is the easiest fight, is the easiest matchup for me. So to answer your question directly, you know, a rematch with those guys or Lyoto, Vitor or Anderson, I would love to fight any of those three guys.
Yeah, actually looking after the champion, Chris Weidman, Anderson is still ranked first in the middleweight division above Lyoto and Vitor. If you did get a fight against the Spider, would you be looking to take a page out of the Chris Weidman book, or would you be going in there with the Tim Kennedy game plan?
I think Chris Weidman and I have really, really similar approaches to fighting. We hit hard from everywhere, and that is available because people don't want to be on the ground with us. We're pressure chain wrestlers who, you know, like, have no problem shooting 2, 3, 4 times to score a takedown, but you don't want to get hit by us. Like, it's no secret, if you're on the ground with me, I'm going to be in a dominant position, and, you know, I'm going to be trying to hurt you. Same with Chris. You know, people fear being on the ground with us. So, with that in mind, it makes us easier to hit people. I feel like, hey, you out-wrestled Bisping. Like, yeah, I did, but he didn't have a chance in wrestling. Because of that, I was able to hit him 117 times, you know, with overhand left, overhand rights, you know, and put him on queer legs like 3 different times. So I think there's a lot of similarities between Chris Weidman and I on how we fight and how we would approach fighting Anderson. God, I'm answering your questions with really long responses. I'm sorry.
No. It's perfect. We had John Anik on a few months back, and literally, I want to say every response he did was probably 5 minutes or longer. That dude can talk. We've got a couple listener questions for you. The first one from Jay Jeans. He wants to know your opinion on Michael Bisping's injured eye. It still looked a little abnormal during your fight, but only Mike knows really to what extent it actually affected him. Do you think his eye injury played a role in that fight at all?
Yeah, he definitely did not look like the best version of Michael Bisping. And if his eye played a role in that, you know, that's disheartening. He was slow to counter. He was easy to take down. I, as much as I hate to say it, I'm a fan of Michael Bisping. I think he's good as a fighter, not as a person or, you know, as a clean fighting athlete, but the guy has been in the top 10 of the division for a really, really long time. I think it'd be ignorant of me to say who's that guy, but, he was definitely off that night. And if that had to do with his eye, you know, like I hope he takes a serious look at the rest of his life, the longevity of, you know, how he can live his life with, you know, having a seriously injured eye. People forget that we have this small window, this small pocket of time to our earning potential is, you know, in counted in a few years, not in decades. You know, if I had a normal job, I could work 30, 40 years at it. You know, in fighting, we have just a few years to make everything. And that has to last us after we're done. Our bodies are broken and hurt after this career. You know, Mike's a perfect example of that. You know, like I hope he's smart, and I hope he's been smart, that, you know, if his eye is injured, he can just be done. But to answer the question directly, I really don't know. He didn't seem like the best version of himself on the night that we fought.
Yeah, it's really hard to sort of make a judgment call and say whether or not you think he should hang up the gloves, because really only Mike knows to what extent his vision is actually being you know, impaired. Our other listener question is from Hate for the State, a little bit more lighthearted. He wants to know if the offer still stands for anyone to join you at your place in Texas when the zombie apocalypse goes down.
It's never been an anybody. You know, you have to be, without a doubt, be able to contribute in a productive, meaningful way to my little group. You have to understand that my group of people are going to be like special forces guys, you know, and engineers and doctors. Like these are my friends here in Austin, guys that would be part of, you know, like the post-apocalyptic world leaders, would probably reside right around here in Austin. So yes, if you can fight your way to me in Texas and to my friends, you will live and you will survive. That is an open invitation. But if you get here, you better be a contributor. If you're not a productive member of our society in this post-apocalyptic world, you will not be asked to stay.
I love that answer. My own sort of follow-up to it, what is your zombie weapon of choice? You know, Daryl's got the crossbow, you know, a lot of different weapons in the zombie apocalypse. What is yours?
You know, I think we have to break it down by range. You know, everything between 1,000 meters to 2 miles. I'm going to be shooting my 330 at Lapua. You know, pretty effortless to be able to hit a slow mover like that out to those ranges. 1,000 meters to 400 meters, that's going to be my LaRue OBR 7.62x5.1. And everything from 400 meters up to about 50 feet is going to be my LaRue OBR 5.56, 223, you know, like an M16 or M4, that's what that is. And then from 50 feet, you know, up to about 10 feet, I'm going to be pretty happy with my Benelli, which is a semi-automatic shotgun. And then, you know, everything closer than that, I'm going to have my pistol and my samurai sword. So I'm a happy camper from, you know, 5 feet out to a couple of miles with what I have here in the house.
I love how detailed that answer is. Tim, my final question for you. It's abundantly clear you've got a really positive message and set of ideals you want to express to people on The Rogan Show. Joe implored you to start your own podcast, which, by the way, I would subscribe to immediately. Have you given any more thought to starting your own show or podcast or something like that since Joe put it on you?
You know, he was really aggressive about that. Not immediately. You know, I think before you can tell people how they should live their lives, you should try experiencing them. You know, like before I'm going to tell a guy like what road to walk, I want to be in his shoes and try to walk it. I have a lot of living left to do. You know, I have a title I want to fight for. I have some more countries I want to live in and travel to. You know, there's some evil people on the planet that I wish I had opportunity to kill. You know, like this is my life. This is who I am, but I'm not done living it and learning about it. Well, I don't think you ever are, but I'm not really at a point yet that I'd want to say, okay, this is my opinion about something, because, a lot of those opinions aren't well organized. You know, I'm still figuring a lot of things out. And, right now the way that I'm going to positively affect people is through example. You know, like, this is how I live my life. This is, you know, like, I think, the way to do it. But I'm going to keep my feet moving and keep moving forward until I figure the rest out.
That is an awesome viewpoint to have, man. And Tim, again, I can't say it enough. Thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us today. Any plugs, sponsors, anything like that you'd like to get out there before we let you go?
Yeah, just thanks so much for listening. Podcasts, interviews, blogs, these are things that like keep the MMA hype going, and I appreciate it. I appreciate people listening to me. All of my stuff's the same: Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, website, Tim Kennedy MMA, and on it, Ranger Up, Gerber, like you guys, thanks for putting food on the table and keeping me alive between fights. So, troops, thanks for everything. Keep fighting. That's all I got.
All right, follow this man on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, everything. Tim Kennedy MMA. We really appreciate it, Tim. We'd love to have you back on one day in the future. I really enjoyed this interview. Have a great day, man.
Yes, sir. Catch you later.